commission and staff are in separate locations and not at City Hall. Before we start the meeting, I would like to go over some housekeeping items. Today's meeting is being recorded. Those tuning in will notice that all participants, with the exception of the commission and some city staff members, are muted and video has been disabled. With this said, we will allow participants an opportunity to speak during public comment periods. If you wish to speak during public comment, there's a toolbar either at the top or bottom of your screen that will appear when you hover over it with your cursor. Click on the word participants and a box will open up on your screen showing a list of participants. And at the bottom of that box, you can click on raise hand. This will be seen by the meeting facilitator and you will be unmuted at the appropriate time to ask your question or give input. During the time you are unmuted, please make sure that you don't have any background noise such as TVs and radios and so forth. Even the shuffling of papers can be picked up and cause disruptive audio feedback through its microphones. I sent my grandkids home, so we don't have any background noise here. All of our standard procedures will be adhered to, such as stating your name and address when called on. Comments will be kept 5 minutes or less, and vulgarity and inappropriate language will not be tolerated and will result in being immediately muted, possibly removed from the meeting. If you are unsure how to virtually raise your hand to participate in discussions, you can call 582-0336 at any time during the meeting and the executive assistant Barb Brooks or Patrick will be happy to assist you with the process. I would like to thank everyone in advance for your patience and cooperation as we work through today's meeting. So at this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Well, let's start with roll call, Cindy, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page? Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Thank you. I would like to make a motion for Sally Page to have an excused absence from today's meeting.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We only have one item on the consent agenda. It's the approval of the July 14th, 2020 City Commission special meeting minutes as presented.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move the minutes down to new business item 9B for the clarification.
Okay, no problem. So noted, those will be under new business. Let's go on to hearing of citizens' comments on any non-agenda item. Patrick, do we have any guests with us today?
We do have a few guests now, hands raised at the moment.
Okay. Last call, guests, for non-agenda items.
Seeing none.
Thank you. Moving on to correspondence. Anything, Mike?
No, sir.
And moving on to city manager's report. Mike?
Yes, a few items for this afternoon. First off is our long delayed and awaited re-refurbishment of the tennis and pickleball courts is now complete, and the courts reopened yesterday, Monday, and they look great. Four layers of coatings were completed last week, finalizing the project. And I'd like to compliment Tim for his steadfastness inheriting that project and seeing it through to a successful conclusion. Mike Peterson of our DPW, along with Jim Farley, bringing the fire department's aerial truck, has changed out all the very tall, high-pressure sodium parking lot lights in our main boat launch. And you'll notice a big difference if you drive by it recently. Half of them weren't even working before, and that should save us, provide a safer environment while providing money and energy savings as well. The pavement marking project on our streets and parking areas began last week, and as of yesterday, all the mainline striping, basically the center lines, was 100% done. The arrows were about 75% done, crosswalks were about halfway done, and they're working on the individual parking stalls supposedly next week. I saw that we're out again working on them last night as well too, so they might have a little bit more done than that. Obviously, we've had a couple major storms recently, and our DPW is still working to clean things up from around town. A bunch of tree removal, and this is day seven of that. They're shifting from tree removal, shifting to tree removals from the parks at this point. And obviously this has helped replenish the brush supply up at North Point compost site. So fortunately that we were able to get that cleaned up before the storms came. With the recent storms and all the rain that came with it, it has greatly increased the flows out that have been going through our wastewater treatment plant. With one day surpassing 1.5 million gallons of fluid coming into the plant. Usually at this time of year, it usually hangs a little bit below 1 million gallons per day. We've also had some equipment at the wastewater plant fail recently, and which may cost us in about neighborhood of about $75,000 to repair or replace. We're going to be checking to see if any of that equipment is going to be covered by our insurance and help offset some of those costs. Despite all of this, the plant continues to operate, and there have been no overflows as have been reported in other communities. Fortunately for us, during the recent storm damage and the power outages that really affected the north side of the city, our recently completed and recycled generator project that we'd been working on for some time was put to good use and helped keep the north side water system operating during those outages. Recently, in the last week or so, the state's new PFAS regulations have gone into effect with greatly reduced limits. Our water system, in its most recent test, had no detectable limits of PFAS, so we're in very good shape with regards to that. Up by the DPW facility at the dog park, they're working on the agility area. The granular base preparation has been completed by our crews, and we're waiting for further definition as to what type of surface the committee is going to want to go with. Their original one may not be available. And just to let you know that there'll be a softball tournament in Rotary Park this weekend. We continue to get applications in with regards to the clerk's treasurer position, and we'll be accepting those through August 10th. The manufactured housing district zoning request for the 30 acres off of Jefferson Street is scheduled to come to the City Commission at our next meeting on August 11th for a first reading. Assuming the Commission goes forward with it at that time, the earliest opportunity for a second reading would be September 22nd. That's usually a noon meeting. I would recommend that we hold it on an evening meeting like October 13th. And that's something we can discuss when it formally comes before the commission at our next meeting. Last week, Governor Whitmer extended the ability to hold public meetings virtually, and she changed that to a floating deadline now, which is now set to expire 28 days past the expiration of the of whatever emergency declaration is then in place. The current emergency declaration is set to expire on August 11th. But given the trends from COVID and in on a webinar yesterday with a representative of the Michigan Municipal League, they pretty firmly expect that that'll be extended past this August 11th date. So We're going to have the ability to do Zoom meetings for a while. Again, going back to some of our earlier conversation, we'll just have to determine when we want to move away from that. Just a general reminder to the public, and we'll be getting some more information out this in the Chamber e-newsletter and hopefully through the rest of the media, that political or other private yard signs are not to be located in the public right-of-way near the street and are to be on the building side of any sidewalks or utility poles. And we're asking if people have any doubts about where they can place them to contact us for more information. As of about 10 o'clock this morning, we had 849 absentee ballots that were issued for next Tuesday's election. So that's coming up very quick. I did have a couple questions that came to me that I saw after I sent out my, provided my report or prepared my report. And I'll try and answer those now. And then we'll see if there's any other questions the commission or anybody else has. As the commission's aware, we've been trying and to get a required permit from the Michigan Department of Transportation's Rail Division to complete the Boyne Valley Trail project, specifically the railroad crossing that's just east of US 131. I sent out a letter in coordination with our consulting engineers on that on the 1st of July to MDOT. The feedback I've got on it from the local TSC and Gaylord that we worked through was very positive and supportive. But I've received no further feedback on that other than they're considering it and trying to get things moved along. So at this point, there still is no permit that we're aware of for that from MDOT's Rail Division. So I do have calls in again with our some of our elected legislators in Lansing to see if they can help move that along. So stay tuned. Once we get it, you'll be the first among the first to know. With the storms that came in on July 18th and 19th, there was no specific damage to our marina. Maybe a little erosion around the edges. There was one boat that was tied up at the end of the new dock section that was put in last year, and that rowed up and rubbed up against some of the posts and actually snapped some of the posts off there. I think I counted like seven of the posts were actually damaged. The boat was able to leave a couple days later. Nobody was injured. And with regards to the closing of the Boyne City Gazette, when the commission approved the Boyne City Gazette or shortly thereafter, they also approved a motion that basically provided us backup coverage from the Petoskey News Review if we needed them. The Gazette could not provide the services. So we're going to be operating on that for probably a couple months as we go out and seek new bids with regards to a newspaper of record. So that's all the information I have at this point. If there's any other questions or any additional information that I could provide, I'd be glad to try and do so.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioners, any questions for Mike? Oh. All set? Okay, thank you. Moving on to our reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have before us in our packet the financial statement for June. Is there any questions for Cindy? All right. Let's move into old business. We have the International Property Maintenance Code, which we, 2 weeks ago, we postponed until today. And we'll turn that over to Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, as you mentioned, we saw this 2 weeks ago and postponed the first reading until today to give staff the opportunity to address some concerns that were raised by the commission and the public at that meeting. Specifically, they were the availability of the code, the nature and method of enforcement, our expertise and sustainability to enforce the code into the future, and any conflicting existing regulations and how those will be dealt with. In regards to availability of the code, we have purchased a hard copy that's available at City Hall for anyone to review, and also supplied a link to the International Compliance Code Group with a link to the 2018 code. And that's the one that we're considering to adopt. Every 3 years they adopt that, update the code. So those are now available for anyone to review, and anyone who has questions with it, I would be happy to answer those. In regards to the nature and the method of enforcement, the International Property Maintenance Code was developed to primarily secure health, safety, and welfare. And that was the ultimate goal of the code, and establish, you know, minimum standards to ensure those. And that's the objective in mind that we would take with enforcement of the code. We would look at what is a threat to health, safety, and welfare and address those issues. The code is pretty comprehensive and covers a lot of stuff. And, you know, not all violations identified in the code could be considered threats to health, safety, welfare. So we would look at, you know, that would be our primarily our enforcement objective to look at infractions that do have a impact on those and address those. And we talked a little bit about discretion. Pretty much any code that's adopted, the enforcing agency has some level of discretion and of enforcing that code, and this would be no different. And I think it's important to distinguish between discretion and selective enforcement. Selective enforcement is basically where you have two equal sets of circumstances and you treat those differently for different people. That's not the intent, and that's not how it will operate. Discretion is basically the level of enforcement. We will look for issues that do have a threat to health, safety, and welfare, and we will pursue those, and we'll pursue those equally across the board for all folks. There was also the issue of us looking for search warrants if someone made a complaint about a suspected violation in someone else's house. That is not the case, and that will not be the case. In the past 17 years of enforcing the dangerous building ordinance, we've requested an administrative search warrants twice. And those were for, you know, the reasons to look at a structure in its totality to see if a demolition order was necessary. And also, if we did that, we had to do asbestos abatement, and we would have to take samples and do that mitigation prior to tearing the building down. So those are the reasons for that. And I would suspect in the future, a similar kind of rationale and frequency for any kind of a warrant that we'd ever get. In regards to the sustainability of the program, I'm pretty confident right now current staff would have the ability to administer the majority of the code. And on cases where we would need some outside help, I would suggest that we do it, you know, on a contract as needed basis with either an individual or a firm. And there are individuals and firms across the state that do this kind of thing. When previously considering the code, there was some communication with the Charlevoix County Building Department that they could act as an enforcing agent. And that may be a possibility as well, or they could serve as, you know, an as needed expert to review, you know, a certain circumstance. So we could explore that potential as well. Right now we do, you know, have funds dedicated for a hearing officer and holding hearings and doing the dangerous building ordinance administration and enforcement. I would anticipate the cost needed to hire a consultant on an as needed basis would be similar to the amounts that we're spending on this currently. So I don't expect any additional budget impact with the adoption of this code and how we would manage to enforce it. And regarding to conflicting ordinances, Currently, we have the dangerous building ordinance in the code. There is a section on unsafe structures. They're pretty similar and cover the same kind of things. So I would recommend, you know, the repeal of the existing dangerous buildings and structure ordinance and use the International Property Maintenance Code to address that issue instead. There are some other ordinances that address the same kind of thing, such as the existing weed ordinance, storm drainage and some other items. And we can review, you know, those existing codes to make sure that they're consistent and amend or repeal those as necessary. So this is being brought for first reading. And if the commission wants to move ahead, the first available date to schedule a second reading would be September 8th, 2020. So if you have any specific questions, I'd be more than happy to answer those.
Thank you, Scott. At this point, let's open it up to any other department heads or any other staff for any comments. Nobody out there, Patrick? Let's go to citizens' comments. Please state your name, address. 5 minutes limits. We did have Chuck and Chris last week. Are they with us today?
They're not, Mayor.
Okay. Or is there anyone else out there yet, Patrick?
None currently, no.
Okay. Let's go to commission discussion. Ron, you want to start?
Well, this property maintenance code, I think it's all encompassing, and I think we're ready to move forward to the second reading on this. A couple things that I had in mind that wasn't clear to me was what conditions have to be met before we can issue a civil infraction ticket, and who can issue it.
Can you cover that, Scott? Yeah.
Yeah. The conditions would be related to whatever the infraction was. And the ordinance specifies a specific notification process that the person needs to be notified of what the violation is, what the necessary remedy for that violation is, and a reasonable time to accommodate that repair or renovation or whatever is required. Once that period is over, and there of course there's an appeal process to this as well once that official notification goes out. So if they do not appeal and they do not make the required repair, that's when a civil infraction can be issued. And any authorized official can issue that. So my department, if the police department is authorized, they could do it. So it's any authorized official of the city can issue that civil infraction.
Okay. Yeah, the last item I had too here is in regards to enforcement, the cost of doing it, who will receive the enforcement money that was generated through a ticket?
There's that split between the court and the city. So I think there's an administration cost that money goes to. It's similar to how it works now. And then the city gets the balance of it.
Okay. That's all I had for this at this moment.
Thank you, Ron. Dean?
I'm comfortable with the direction that we're heading here. I did read over the whole thing and the end once again. And I think one of the things that's important to reiterate is that what our intent is here, and that really helped me to think about that, that what we're really trying to do is to prevent distressed structures from getting to the point where our only option is to insist that they be torn down. And this can be a valuable tool to do that. And thinking about that, and also it made more sense to me to look at the code kind of holistically as one thing, instead of trying to parse down to individual items like we've talked about before. We've talked about torn screen, we talked about chipped paint. But if I step back and look at the whole thing and think about what would happen in a situation where we did identify one of these structures that's in a distressed state or received a complaint about it, all the items in here provide tools of being able to bring that to some, as it says in the code, some minimum level of health and safety. In that regard, I think that despite all the detail, it's a tool that I think will help us out. The one thing I'd suggest that's come up before is that we accompany the ordinance, or build into the ordinance, I'm not sure which is best, a document that really just draws from the communication, Scott, that we've received from you in the past, that outlines number one, intent, and then the three items that you addressed in this current accompanying memo, enforcement, conflicting ordinances, and so on. And that provides, I would think, information for residents of our community about what we're getting at, and also provides some guidance, especially for future code enforcers, of what the problem is we're trying to solve in Boyne City, and the approach that we'd like to embark to implement this ordinance. Other than that, I think that we're ready, certainly, to adopt this and move to a second reading.
Thank you, Dean. Hugh?
Yes, Scott, I know East Jordan and Petoskey have implemented this or adopted this. Could you maybe talk about East Jordan's experience? And maybe Rhonda could talk a little bit about Petoskey's experience with this. Just, we're not trailblazers here necessarily, so other communities have done this successfully.
Sure. I spoke with Jonathan Scheel. He is the zoning administrator for East Jordan and Charlevoix. And he indicated that there was kind of similar concerns with the East Jordan regards to perhaps overzealous enforcement or, addressing minor issues. And they had the same kind of philosophy, indicating that the purpose of this is to ensure, health, safety, welfare, and identifying a minimum standards to make sure those are adhered to. And they did incorporate, as Dean kind of referred to, is a document prefacing the ordinance and kind of the outlining philosophy for the enforcement of it and the goals and objectives for the enforcement of it. And I would recommend a similar kind of thing. And I got that verbiage yesterday afternoon from Jonathan. So I think I would put something together for us, and we can look at it and consider it with the second reading as part of the adoption process.
Ron, is there anything you can add from Petoskey?
Is Rhonda muted?
Yeah, I had to wait until they unmuted me.
Okay.
Petoskey kind of did something a little different, and it worked for Petoskey and what Petoskey's needs were at the time. I can speak to other municipalities that have adopted the IMPC for similar purposes, and that they wanted to catch the blight early before it became the dangerous building that then had to be ripped down to the ground. So, in my experience, we don't get a lot of blight cases that come through the court. There's a big push toward catching it early, dealing with it early when it's cheaper and, quite frankly, residents can afford to make the changes necessary before it becomes a huge expense that then is maybe unwieldy for them. The goal is always with compliance. Out of the many cases that we've had, and again, they're few and far between in terms of the types of ordinances that I have to prosecute. But the few and far between I'd say out of 4 to 5 or 6 of them in the last couple of years, you have 4 that work overtime to gain compliance. They take the steps necessary. You adjourn things and give them time to work through the issues and try to come into compliance. And effort is rewarded with additional time and, you know, understanding. And then you have the occasion where they're just not going to do it. And we have had instances where we've had to go even jail time for some. That was through a little bit different mechanism, but the same idea is always with the goal of compliance. And when you have standards in place like the IMPC, you have the contractors are familiar with it. Everyone knows what it is. It's been proven in the courts. It's not challenged in terms of its ambiguity or its language. It's fairly well accepted. So it's a good vehicle to do the types of things that Boyne's wanting to do.
So Scott, with the policy summary that you would include, would we have that before we approve this, or is this like a work in progress kind of?
I would include that with the second reading, so you would have the, you know, be able to review that and you know, make any changes you thought necessary to it.
And then you would identify as we go along with any conflict with existing ordinances and bring those to the commission as they arise.
Correct. Yeah, we would probably have to, you know, I think first step would probably be the repeal of the dangerous buildings ordinance and then, you know, make any other necessary changes to any other conflicting ordinances that we find.
Okay, thanks. That's all I have, Mayor.
Thanks, you. Anything else, Rhonda?
No, I don't have anything further at this time.
Okay, appreciate it. I guess my comment would be that I think we understand it, but it maybe has not been stated. But another reason that this is a justifiable process is to protect the neighborhood and to protect. I've had 3 calls in the last year that people saying, hey, the house next to me, there's rodents in and out, there's holes in the roof, and so on and so forth. So that hasn't been stated today, but I think it's a very valuable tool that we can protect the neighborhood with starting the process on these homes that are not up to code. And they're very obvious codes. There's, you know, there's pictures of raccoons and living in under the house. And so it's a good thing. I think we're definitely headed in the right direction. With that in mind, I would entertain a motion.
I wonder, Mayor, if I could ask one more question of Rhonda.
Please.
Yeah, we just talked about that idea of a policy document to go along with the code and the ordinance adopting the code. How would you recommend we do that? Should that be like just an administrative document that we review and comment on? Should it be something that's adopted as part of the ordinance, or maybe some other method?
Either one would be acceptable. I mean, my thought is if this is a first read and we're doing a second read, if you wanted to put the policy right at the beginning so it's very clear what the intent is and what the goals are of the ordinance, I think it's fine to have it in the ordinance. And that might be the easiest way.
Great, thank you.
Mayor, I have another question too for Rhonda. So Rhonda, this is 2018. So how often does it get renewed, and is it automatically then we would be at like 2021, or do we have to do something formally to keep it updated?
It's every few years. It tends to be, I want to say 4. I think the last one was, well, maybe not, because I think the last one was 2016, but I think before that it was 2012. It's a process for getting that put together because it goes through a committee and it goes through comments by not only municipalities and citizens, but it goes through builders and various trades. So there's a lot of input into that code for when it's reviewed and updated. The standard has just been to say as amended or the most recent version of, provided that you stay up to date. I mean, obviously you don't want to say we're adopting and using the most recent version of the International Property Code available at the city if you don't have that version available. but I don't think it's going to cause too many problems, because as long as you have that version available for citizens to see at the city, there's no question about what codes you're enforcing or what your ordinance is intended.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Yes, Mike?
And correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but I think if you look at the ordinance as proposed on page one of that, in section three, it talks about designated as an international property maintenance code, most recently adopted edition. So it would automatically update per that.
Okay.
And I think Scott said it adopted, the previous edition was 2015. This one that we have before us is 2018. So it's, I think he said it was every 3 years that, it, that they normally come out with one. Does that sound right, Scott?
Yeah, I was reading in the preface of the copy I have, and that's what they indicated, that it's updated every 3 years.
Great.
All right, thank you. Any more discussion?
Well, I would make a motion that we adopt on first reading the International Property Maintenance Code for a second reading on whatever the date was in September. I'm sorry, I don't recall.
September 8th, 2020 is what Scott said.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
We have a first and a second by Ron. A motion by Hugh, second by Ron. Any further discussion? Okay, roll call please, Cindy.
Brunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
I wonder if I can make one comment that we've adopted this.
Please.
Kind of directed toward Scott and Mike. I wonder if there, it would be worth reaching out to, you know, a couple of individuals or some individuals in our community who were concerned, just to provide more opportunity for them to learn more, kind of go through a journey like we did about the intent of this and what we're trying to achieve, so that they're up to speed before a second reading in September.
Sure.
Are you volunteering? We can work on that.
Well, you asked me or Scott.
I guess I was asking you, Dean, but I guess we can turn that over to staff, and I think any of us commissioners would be willing to reach out if but staff can work on that. But that's probably a good idea, Dean. Okay, anything else on that topic? Let's move on to item B under old business, Boyne Valley EMS service contract. Is that you, John?
Let's make sure he's unmuted here. Hang on a sec. There he is. Let's unmute him. There he goes. John?
Yep, we made it.
There we go.
Hi, John.
Morning.
In reference to the contract with Boyne Valley, you got the floor.
Well, what you have before you is a improved addition, which, with the assistance of Rhonda, helps to protect both the city and the township. The actual service agreement is very similar to the intergovernmental agreements we have with the other townships. The only exception that's different in theirs versus the others is we recognize their residents to have no out-of-pocket expense. That expense is then protected or covered by the township itself. It's an 18-month agreement. It automatically renews 90 days before the end of the agreement. This one would go until November of next year. Otherwise, this brings all the services under one house. This is, instead of running a dual accounting, trying to manage two sets of books, this just recognizes that the city of Boyne City is providing EMS coverage to the Boyne Valley Township area. Rhonda, did I cover that correctly?
Let's see if she got muted. Hang on a sec.
There we go. Yes.
Thank you, Rhonda. This has the same compensation that the other townships are participating in. It's the dwellings that were identified in the 2010 census with a 2.5 occupancy. And then we do a three-year utilization that then gives them a percentage. That all boils down to, it has an addendum on the back that says each community has a percentage of the anticipated loss based on their dwellings and utilization. We've been doing this now really probably 9 years with all the other townships.
That was a system that they requested, correct, John?
It was. There was original discussion in the way fire services do it. They usually do it based on SEV. Back in 2011, the thought process was, well, we're not covering structures, we're covering lives. And the fairest way to do this is, whether you're a Hudson Township or a Bay Township, everybody has structures, everybody has residents. And this was put forth as an amenable way of compensation.
So, John, we have two documents. You want to describe the difference between the two documents that we're looking?
Well, the first document is the service agreement that we're going to provide 24/7 EMS coverage. It also does refer to the fact that the term of this agreement is 18 months and goes until November 30th, 2021. The second agreement is, God, I love it when it does this to me. The second agreement is a lease of the building and a lease of the equipment. This recognizes, the lease recognizes that, hang on, I'm having fun with my computer. The lease recognizes that Boynton Valley brings to the table both a facility that houses the crew, houses the vehicles, plus the two ambulances, 52 Alpha 1 and 52 Alpha 2. And then we give credit back to them for that. None of the other townships have that involvement in the delivery of service. It's simply a simple service contract, whereas with Boynton Valley, because of the utilization of the facility and the utilization of the vehicles, we were giving them a credit back against the subsidy. So instead of having a subsidy of $60,000, their subsidy would be more like $30,000. With the help of Rhonda, we cleaned up the lease agreement. We succeeded in writing the original agreement, not mentioning that the township was leasing it to the city. So we have the facility identified. We have the fact that we know what's in the facility. We know the condition of what's in the facility. We will maintain standard wear and tear as far as normal wear and tear of the building or normal wear and tear of the vehicles. Any capital as far as, say, the garage door, the HVAC system, the appliances, any of that would be then the responsibility of the township to fix or replace. And that goes with the vehicles, the same idea that they own the vehicles, they will have a replacement schedule for the vehicles, as well as any large equipment item inside the vehicle. The one thing that the township and we both agreed on, and I should step back on that, if we bought a new monitor, that monitor cost should then be shared by everyone in the system. So it wouldn't just be a Boynton Valley responsibility. Boynton Valley's responsibility would be in the replacement of the actual vehicle itself. Again, that ties in with the original agreement so that if we cancel the service contract, the lease contract cancels. If we extend the lease, if we extend the service contract, the lease continues to roll over. Do you have any questions?
John, can you address timeline?
We tied this to May 1st, which would be the beginning of our fiscal year. And so this would go from May 1st to November 30th of next year with an automatic renewal. Our agreements with the other townships are just a one-year agreement, again, on a one-year renewal, an annual renewal, that to date no one has changed. We did add service area in Eveline Township, and we added service area in Melrose Township. We have included Chandler Township, so we have actually a larger footprint to provide coverage. With the station in Boyne Valley, that assists us in providing a more effective response into Melrose Township and into Chandler Township. So I think this is a positive melding of we're one system. We've been trying to be one system for a couple of years now, and this just solidifies it.
Any other questions? Commissioners, go ahead, Hugh.
John, is there much of a budget impact, or is it kind of a wash? Or
I think Cindy would tell you from an accounting standpoint, this is all coming under one set of books. This isn't changing as far as cost of operation. We already have this cost. This just brings to the table, you know, the continued subsidization from the township to help provide the service. The revenue goes towards the actual operational cost, and we're not trying to split it to say this is yours and this is ours and this is what you owe and this is what we owe. This will make it much cleaner.
Tom, if I could.
Please, Mike.
Okay, just a couple things. One, going back to Hugh's comment with regards to cost, the one cost that's a little bit different is the lease for the station and the ambulances and their equipment. That isn't something that the township was being compensated for in the past. And that kind of goes to the way that the process evolved. So that those are costs that are going to be shared amongst all the agencies, the townships and the city and things of that nature to cover those costs, and rightly so. But just to kind of refresh everybody and from a point of history, I mean, this started back out in before 2002 when we basically provided from our one station all the support for the areas except the ones that John said were recently added in Melrose, Chandler, and
Eveline
townships. The footprint was pretty much the same, but we responded from the old Cortez Flynn building for a number of years. Then Boyne Valley Township chose to create their own EMS service, and they operated that for a number of years. Then they had difficulties staffing that, and we kind of came in and backfilled that for them, where we provide the staffing and basically try to operate their system with our people. And that's the way it had run for a couple of years. And then about 2 years ago, the township basically wanted to make sure they had their best option out there. And they started exploring. They talked to Jordan Valley Ambulances, and they talked to Emma County, and they checked with other ambulance services to see, you know, where could they get the best value for their residents and things of that nature. Obviously, our position was that, you know, we worked well together and we provided a great service and probably the most cost effective. And I think after, you know, looking at all the options, the township, and we'll find out for sure, it came to the agreement that, yeah, this is the best option for them with this revised format. And without trying to keep two sets of books, which was just a bookkeeping nightmare, because we're basically trying to keep the facade of the old Boyne Valley Township EMS service there, but it really wasn't there. And trying to keep two sets of books as to whose run it was and who got the money and, you know, what were the costs and supplies and trying to divvy all that stuff. I mean, it just kept Michelle at that time and Cindy, just really, really busy trying just to track that. So this will be simpler for us to maintain, a lot less staff involvement. It'll be a lot simpler for Boyne Valley Township, a lot cleaner and clearer, which is one of the reasons we kind of proposed this type of a system when they were looking for a change. So I think it'll work out. I think it should work out cleaner for everybody and reflect the what everybody's bringing to the table still. Just a reminder that, John, do we have any update with regards to Boyne Valley Township and their approval process?
They're meeting on it this evening as a committee. I'm told that I'll be called in the morning as to if there's any comments from the committee, and then they will call a special township meeting to address the contract.
So I guess my recommendation would be to the city commission, if you're comfortable with the agreement based on whatever discussions you're going to have next, is that you would adopt the agreement and that just give staff a little bit of leeway in case there's any insignificant changes or, you know, non-significant changes, you know, a typo here or, you know, a minor correction or a little tweak that needs to be done. But if there's something substantial that the township wants, then we'd have to work that out with them and then bring it back to the commission.
Thank you, Mike. Let's move on to any other staff input, any other department heads?
And you might, before you get into commission discussion, you might want to ask Rhonda if she has anything further she wants to add, if she's still unmuted.
Still unmuted. I don't have anything to add at the moment, but I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission might have.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Rhonda, could you just briefly explain an intergovernmental agreement?
Well, it kind of depends on what kind of an agreement you have, but the idea is the Michigan legislature thought it would be appropriate to allow various municipalities to join together for the common good and common services that all the municipalities are supplying in order to lessen the cost to any one municipality, particularly where you had a concentration of municipalities that were in a fairly confined area, so that you could provide those services across the area at a shared cost rather than each one maintaining its own individual system.
Thank you.
All right, Patrick, let's open it up to the public. Anybody out there want to speak on this topic?
I'm not showing any hands at the moment.
Okay. Well, let's see here. Let's go to board deliberation. Dean, you want to start?
Sure. I confirm if I'm interpreting this correctly, but the way I'm interpreting this is that through extensive negotiation and discussion with the township, that this agreement is more similar to the arrangement that we have with the other participating townships, while recognizing the uniqueness in Boyne Valley. They have this a facility and equipment, and plus that specific assurance that they make to their residents. Is that accurate portrayal of what this is?
Yes.
Okay. In that case, you know, it sounds good. And I think that this has been a journey, and it's a good opportunity then to move forward.
Thank you, Dean. Hugh?
Yeah, I agree with Dean. I support this and appreciate all the hard work, and hopefully it will go long past 18 months, and this will be a good remedy.
Thank you. Ron?
I've got a couple questions. First one would be do we still have a capital equipment replacement fund that the other townships are participating in?
Yes. We're putting $20,000 a year towards a capital vehicle replacement and have been doing that for several years.
Okay, and then the other question I have is, are we still required to have two people on hand at 24/7 at the Boyne Falls location?
We're responsible to maintain that truck as licensed, which means you would have two people on hand and available. So as of today, I'm here in Boyne City with Jesse. And Brenda's on as a paramedic in Boyne Valley with Amanda. And that gives us the ability to utilize two vehicles 24/7, 7 days a week immediately, which is an amazing asset for a volunteer system.
Wow. So the requirement is that is there verbiage that requires that there be two people there 24/7?
No, the verbiage is that it's maintained as licensed. So say tonight if Melissa's on, she would have the Echo car at home and Amanda would be in the building in Boyne Valley. If there was somebody there's no one currently living in the Boyne Valley service area that is close enough to the building. We used to have Barb Loper, who was like four or five houses down from the station. She would just stay at home and come to the station. Right now, all that volunteer structure is no longer applicable to the Boyne Valley. So to maintain it, we at least got to have an EMT in that building 24/7.
Okay. Well, thanks for all the hard work, and we move forward, and I support the proposal and the contract.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. I am also in support. It's a good contract, heading in the right direction. And with that being said, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion, but I have a question about the motion before I make it. That is that perhaps between now and the time that the Boyne Valley Township approves it, they may have some non-substantive clarification they'd like to make to the agreement. If we approve this today, would that still empower city manager to incorporate those suggestions without having to come back to us?
Depends on how you word your motion, Dean. If you give us that authority to make those non-substantive changes, then yes, we would.
All right, in that case, I'd move to approve the agreement with Boyne Valley Township to provide EMS services, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents and make non-substantive changes to the agreement as agreed upon with the township.
I'll second that.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please, Cindy.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
All right. Let's move on to new business, number 9A, the electrical vehicle charging station agreement. Mike?
Yes, for the past several months, I've been exploring the possibility of providing electric vehicle charging stations in the city. During that process, Consumers Energy made available a grant to help fund the cost of installing such stations. And we were successful in receiving a $5,000 grant for installing a two-vehicle charging station on River Street toward the east end of Old City Park. And Stiggs was successful in getting a similar grant for a charging station located near their facility. The location near Stiggs is proposed to be in the parking lot north of the library towards the northwest corner of that lot. And the locations are shown on the maps that are included on page 12 of the attached agreement. Those locations were selected due to the general availability of parking in those spaces. They're close to the downtown, but they're not overly used, where we'd be taking a space that's always used for something else and taking that out of the rotation. And also the sites were selected based on the availability of an adequate electric power supply, so we weren't going to have to spend a lot of money to put new utilities in. Once the grants were secured, I began discussions with various EV station providers who provided quotes to me after meeting me at the various locations. And you'll see that we heard from three firms, Westside Solutions, and their quote was $33,136. Power Home Solar, which also has a EV charging station division, their price was very similar at $32,126. and Hague Auto, and they gave me two options. The first one was similar to the other ones, which was $13,074 plus the power cost. And then there was a second option that they provided that we hadn't heard from anybody else, which was rather than us buying the equipment and having to maintain it and all that type of stuff and basically operate the system, that they would own and operate it. And for that type of a system, there's no upfront money or any money coming from the city. And actually in reverse, we would receive a small credit based on the usage and the length of the term we entered into. When we applied for the grant, there was no money in that budget or in the current budget set aside by either the city or the Main Street for EV charging stations. Although providing them in our community has been favorably discussed several times by the Main Street Board. The costs that I show above include using Consumers Energy's $5,000 grant for the two spaces. And all three of these firms were approved by Consumers Energy, something that's required for them to be able to use the grant. With the Hague Auto option, where they own and operate the stations, basically all we're providing is the four parking spaces, two at each location, and the normal maintenance during the term of it. So, I mean, if a pothole develops or we'd fix it, or if we have to, you know, they'd be plowed with the rest of the lots like we do normally. That is something we'd have to do similarly under any of these scenarios where we made the service available. If we did require them to move out early for some type of a default on the agreement, we would have to reimbursement for that investment. And that's more we'd have to reimbursement, the shorter or the quicker we ask them to leave. While we are not required to provide electric vehicle charging stations, many communities are beginning to do so. And it provides another reason for people to want to or be able to come to our community. I also like the Hague Auto's concept because it would not be something else for us to do, maintain. We're not experts in EV charging stations. This would be an add-on for us where this is something they're looking to establish a network throughout the state and would be one of their prime businesses. Although it's a relatively new company, I see little to no downside and select them to provide the installation. The city attorney has modified and was the attached agreement that was provided by Hague and to better meet the city's need. It has been provided to Hague for their review and they looked it over and got back to us with it and incorporated all the changes, and that was provided in the revised agenda packet that went out this morning. I got that contract back from them last night. So if the commission was agreeable to going forward on this, the charging stations would be installed. They had talked about sometime in August, but probably no later than the fall. So it's my recommendation that the city commission approve entering into the modified agreement with Hague Auto to install and operate two space electric vehicle charging stations as proposed, and authorize the city manager and or city clerk treasurer to execute the agreements subject to resolving any minor details that might arise subject to the city attorney's review. Patrick, can you swing down to page 12 of their agreement with the maps on it, just so the commission can see exactly where those are? So we do have at least one representative from Hague Auto that's available. Abbas may have something to say if the commission has any questions for him, or I'd be glad to try and address any questions the commission might have.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I'd like to hear from Hague representative if we can put him online if he wants to.
Patrick, can you unmute Abbas, please?
Hello. How's it going? How you doing? Yeah, so I'm Abbas. I'm the founder and CEO of Hague Auto. And so, yeah, basically what we're looking to do, as Michael said, is we're actually building out a network throughout Michigan. We're partnered with the MEDC, as well as with Consumer Energy and DTE. to build out a network for Michigan to bring EV charging kind of throughout the state. Right now, it's pretty difficult if you have an electric vehicle to make it pretty much anywhere north of Lansing. And so it's our job to kind of bring that. We're working with several other municipalities, including Grayling, Oscoda, Elk Rapids, Kalkaska, Jackson, and some closer down to the state out of Consumers Energy, which would be like Benton Harbor, Buffalo, Three Oaks, to kind of basically, yeah, bring a network. We think Boyne is a really good location, and it's a place that we'd be really proud to have our network in. And basically, yeah, we take care of everything start to finish. So we work with consumers to make sure that the power is there and adequate and run. We pay for all the equipment and the hardware and installation. Any ongoing maintenance, we make sure that there's a 98% uptime at all times for the equipment. You're going to be having the latest and greatest, so it's kind of future-proofing. The ones that we would be installing are actually even capable of charging faster than any car on the road is currently capable of charging. So that means, you know, we could see in the next 3 to 5 years, if something as a technology evolves, these are not going to be outdated and you're going to have to replace them. We're making sure that our network is going to be, you know, state of the art, and hopefully able to provide that kind of service as things grow and the industry evolves. And basically what we offer to the municipalities for allowing us to put them there is it's kind of like a site host. It's basically kind of like a lease. It's like a revenue share. So for every kilowatt hour of energy that's used, we provide, at the end of the month, we'll provide a usage report. And that usage report will show how many vehicles charged, how many kilowatts of energy were, you know, charged on the vehicles. And we'll provide it's pretty similar to like a gas station where it's like a couple cents per kilowatt for, back to, you know, direct deposit every month to the city of Boyne for hosting us.
Are you a private company or are you a public company or?
We're a private company. So we're the brand that we represent and that we work with, where their basically local partner is NLX or NLENEL. So they're one of the largest sustainable energy companies in the world. They're the 80th largest company period in the world. They're Italian based. So they have a really big presence in Europe, but they also have the largest like solar farm in the US. They have the largest wind farm in the US. So they do a lot of projects like this. And our expertise, we have over 15 years experience in electric vehicles. And so we kind of joined forces to help them get in and expand their electric vehicle charging side of the business.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I was kind of curious about how you charge for your service. I imagine that you swipe a card in there, and then there's a rate that, of course, helps to compensate us to cover your expenses and business income as well.
Yep. So basically, yeah. So obviously, we pay the utility. So we would have our own. It would be on its own separate meter that we would pay directly to consumers. So you guys wouldn't see a bill from consumers. There would be no sorting any of that out. They'd each be on their own separate meter at each location. And so consumers, their rate is roughly about 12 cents a kilowatt hour. We plan to charge about 34 cents a kilowatt hour. That's to include with roughly 2 to 3 cents for Boyne, depending on the duration of the contract that would go to Boyne. Also to cover insurance, the connectivity fees, as they have to be online and connected to the internet. So we do have like a data plan. And then obviously some leftover is profit to help recoup the costs and make money for, you know, providing this amenity. And the way that it works is, it's actually just on the cell phone. So there's like a little QR code right on the charger, and you would scan that code and it takes you directly either, and you have the option of joining an app, which the app is pretty much the same. So there's a lot of apps. If you have an electric vehicle, there's an app called Charge Maps, one called PlugShare. We're also the roaming network for a lot of the like larger national brands, but they're mainly focused on the fast chargers that go in like gas stations, where these are called like destination chargers, where they're kind of like, you know, in municipal parking lots and like companies' parking lots. And so we're their roaming network basically for the non-gas station type size of things. And yeah, you'd basically just scan that app and you could either join and go through those apps, or you would take you straight to like a checkout page and you would just pay for your, you know, for your charge directly.
The other question I had was, who do you anticipate utilizing these? Would it be mostly visitors or employees or residents based on your experience in other communities?
I would say probably visitors. So I would say a lot of, I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, like myself included, I have an electric vehicle. And for me to get anywhere around up north is very tricky right now, if kind of like impossible. So I think what you'd see is, so there's a couple things. So one, it's going to make these locations in Boyne, it's going to be available on all of these apps and maps. So in the vehicle itself, so in Teslas, in like the Chevrolet and the BMWs, they have like an in-car system that shows where charging, public charging is available. And so this locations will show up and say like, hey, you need to charge, you're going up to, you're in this area, you can stop here, they have charging available. And it'll actually like route the vehicle and like put it, update the GPS to show, to, you know, take you there and do it. And actually recommends it based on how much you have left. So if somebody's driving and they might be running out, it might suggest, hey, why don't you stop in Boyne and charge up? You can go grab lunch and things. So I think it's also really good for the city to kind of be on there and be, especially in this type of format where it's actually part of a network. And the fact that it gets represented on these apps and maps, you know, I think it'll help bring like new visitors. And also, but yeah, that's what we expect is really like, especially in like summer months. I think there's people that are going to come, like spend the day, going to go have lunch, going to do different activities. You know, they park their car for an hour or so, they're going to get their car filled up while they're going to have lunch, as opposed to like, you know, somewhere else, basically they're just stopping along the way.
How do you reserve the areas, or like enforcement of just keeping them for charging? Is there a system for that? Or?
So we don't require or ask for enforcement. That would be up to the municipality. We would like to stripe them. It's not a requirement. We would like to stripe them separate, so they would be like a green stripe, similar to like how you'd have striping for a handicap stripe. And that would be at our cost as well. And we would put like two green stripes with the icon of like the charger on the ground painted, like similar to a handicap. We don't ask or require in our agreement, like any type of like enforcement for that. Normally kind of like the visual cues, people generally tend to respect that. If we did see it as a problem, you know, maybe that was something that we could ask or request if they were constantly being blocked or something. We weren't, you know, if we saw they were never being used, then we might, you know, it would be something that we would look into, like, why is nobody there? Maybe people are just parking there randomly. But generally, you know, the visual cues are kind of enough that people recognize that it's kind of like a, you know, like an EV parking zone.
Would that be an administrative task, Mike, to just go ahead and do that? Or is that something that would be a commission decision about marking the spaces to reserve them?
I'd have to take a look at that. I'm trying to remember if when we what I think would probably would happen, Hugh, is if we did put something in place where we created a separate zone or something like that for EV charging, I could probably set up a temporary traffic control order like we do for other parking things. And then that would be tested out. I think it's like 60 or 90 days, and then that comes back to the city commission.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Good topic. Let's move on to, is there any other staff that wants to have input on this?
I do know that we do have Carlin Smith from Consumers Energy tied into the meeting as well, too. I don't know if he has anything he'd want to say.
Sure. Let's open it up to the public. And is Carlin with us today, Patrick?
Yes, he is.
Welcome, Carlin.
I don't have much to add other than Gaylord electric vehicle charging stations are going online in Gaylord this week or early next week. So that's happening there. I know Petoskey has them. Mackinac City has them. Also this week, they're going in Big Rapids, Cattle. Marshall. So it is kind of a trend that's happening, and I think something that really, if we want electric vehicles to really catch on in our state, we need to have an infrastructure to support them. And so happy to see that Boyne City is considering that as well.
All right, thank you. Anybody else out there, Patrick?
Not seeing any hands raised currently.
Okay. Tom, I was wondering if Kelsey had anything to add from a Main Street perspective. I know you already asked for that, but just in case.
Is Kelsey there?
She was. It doesn't look like she's on any longer.
Okay.
Mike, I had just one other question. This won't cause any problems having these spots with snow piling up, will it? I mean, particularly there in Old City Park, does the snow get pushed there and then taken away every, you know, when it gets high?
We might have to maintain that a little bit more than it has been in the past, because that's usually kind of an, except last year, I think Consumers Energy was using quite a bit. And this isn't right at the end there, so usually we pile snow at the ends, so that shouldn't be that big an issue.
Okay.
I think we kind of covered it, but I'll give you a chance, commissioners. Anything, Hugh, you want anything else?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, Ron?
All I can say is, wow, it's really quite a project. And I support Mike's recommendation.
Okay, Dean?
I think this is just fine. I'm looking forward to the day that I have my self-driving EV car. Just take me where I need to go and plug myself into one of these cool stations.
This would be, it probably won't accommodate a bike. It's probably a different voltage. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, it depends. Like a motorcycle, electric motorcycles would work. Electric bike, yes, it would be. It's a different connector.
Okay. Because e-bikes are big right now. But I am in full support and would entertain a motion.
Well, I would move that the City Commission approve entering into a modified agreement with Hag Auto to install and operate two space electric vehicle charging stations as proposed and authorize the city manager and or city clerk treasurer to execute the agreement subject to resolving any minor details that arise after the city attorney's final review, which I think we already have.
All right.
I'll second.
And we have a second by Dean, motion by Hugh. Any further discussion? Roll call, please, Cindy.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Let's move on to item 9B, which is the minute approval of the July 14th City Commission special meeting minutes as presented. I'll turn that over to you, Hugh.
Yeah, I'm trying to dig it and find it. I'll be just a second.
Okay.
It was in the discussion about the International Property Maintenance Code, and there was a comment by Chuck Vondra, said when Charlevoix County adopted the code, it doubled the cost of building a house. It was my recollection that he was referring to the new building code that the county had adopted and not the International Maintenance Code.
Okay, those were the notes that I wrote, so I can make that correction if everyone else agrees.
Okay with it.
Yeah, it would not, I mean, speaking as a builder, it would not double the cost of building a house.
Okay. Right. So I forgot a few words in there, so I can make that correction.
That was all, Mayor.
Okay.
Okay, correction made.
With that correction, I would look for a motion.
So moved.
Okay.
For the minutes of July,
July 14th, okay. City Commission special meeting minutes as presented. So Hugh has the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Ron has the second. Any further discussion? And roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, moving on to good of the order. Ron, you have anything?
I don't have anything today.
Dean?
I'm good.
You?
I would just like to thank all the people who were involved in cleaning up Avalanche and all the trees that were down in, you know, within 24 or 48 hours, everything on the mountain bike trails and the walking paths were all clear. And it was really a great thing because the park is really being heavily used this summer.
Yeah, thank you, Hugh. I know there's a big crew out there at the school property trailway system also. Volunteers, a lot of trees were down, volunteers cutting them, taking their chainsaws on their bike and heading out. So, good point. I don't have anything under good of the order. We'll move on to the announcements. The next meeting is scheduled for August 11th at 7 p.m. And at 1:22, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second
by Dean. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Good evening.
Good
evening. Bye now.